Hi, my name is Hans Peter Meyer, and I'm the host of the Men's Work Podcast, where you'll find interviews with men and with women. You'll find yoga classes, you'll find reflections, you'll find a lot of material to hopefully help you move through the tests that life has handed you: end of marriage, loss of job, marital relationship stress, fatherhood, just being overwhelmed. It's a lot. So listen, if you need to talk, I've got no charge mini coaching sessions at menswork.ca. Enjoy the show.
Hi, my name is Hans Peter Meyer, and welcome to everybody who's listening to this co-ed session of Men's Work groups. I do these, there's a couple of them every month. The co-ed one happens toward the end of the month. If you're interested, send me an email or check out the website, sacredbodies.ca. So today my feminine co-host is Melissa Bloxam. I'm not going to ask Melissa to do the self-description, because I think those things get in the way sometimes of what you might hear here. I just want you to know that Melissa and I have have done a number of podcasts together as part of groups and stuff, and I really enjoy her. I enjoy having conversation with Melissa, and I really appreciate her insights.
Thank you.
And I've asked her to be the co-host on this topic called unconventional marriage. And I use that word marriage loosely, but I think it's, I take it really seriously, what that means. I did train recently as a wedding, official wedding celebrant, so at some point now I can actually marry people in BC and possibly all across Canada, but I'm in no big hurry to do that. I'm more interested in how we create long-term committed relationships, and whether we call them marriage or not, just the kind of things that go into that. Mm-hmm. And what I'd like to do in this session here is just, I'm just going to drop a couple of questions that that men have asked me, not related to this topic, but I think they fit, and I'll talk about that shortly. So one of the men asked, how will I know when I'm ready for her? So some of these guys are doing a training with me, and it's about nervous system, training your nervous system to basically be the presence, what I call the sacred masculine presence that can hold space so that the feminine, the divine feminine, the sacred feminine, whether it's in ourselves or in the people around us or in the woman you love, can flourish. So his question was, how will I know when I'm ready for her? And then a follow-up question that he asked was, how will I know when she's ready for me? So there's an interesting pair there, I think. And then a totally different kind of question, and I'm actually wanting to hear more. I guess it's more of the kind of anger and hurt that men, particularly younger men, are feeling as women set boundaries, as the women they're in relationship with set boundaries. So, you know, the short version of this, actually it's part of what he actually said, was, when will the patriarchy bashing end? Mm-hmm. So this was a man who I'm assuming had been, you know, was feeling some heart pain or some rejection, and that rejection had come in the form of, you know, him being a representative of the patriarchy. So of course he's hurting and wants to know when that will end. Now I think these are actually really good questions for this topic of unconventional marriage, but I'm interested in what you have to say any or all of those questions, Melissa.
Okay. We'll start with the first question. Can you repeat it?
When will I know when I'm ready for her?
When you stop asking that question. I don't think that there's any better answer to it than that. It's like, you won't ask that question when you are. So how do you get ready? I think that's a very personal process. And so then, I mean, that would take like a one-on-one session or container to really, you know, get down to the nitty-gritty of what that means for him specifically. And then the second question was, how will she know?
How will I know when she's ready for me?
When she starts accepting your penetration, like when she starts accepting your requests, when she's engaging, when she's leaning in, when she's receiving.
And how do you think these two relate to this, our topic today? Or how do you have any thoughts on that?
I have a lot of thoughts on the unconventional union. You said marriage, but I like to use the word union. I think that an unconventional union is an opportunity to explore deeper intimacy, honoring both yours and your partner's true needs and desires. I think it opens the door to a much more clearly defined and satisfying relational experience, but it requires a few things, which flies in the face of what a lot of people want to call unconvention. So I think if you want it to be successful, you have to have these things in place. One is massive amounts of trust. So how do you do that? To me, trust is built over a lifetime. And it is until it isn't. So you keep doing things that are trustable and trustworthy until you die. It requires excellent communication skills. And it doesn't have to be ongoing in an intense extreme level. I think it has to be, you know, just, this is what I need, and can you sit with that? And then you start the negotiating process, to put a very clinical term to something that is not clinical at all. I think it does require check-ins, you know, like, how are you feeling about this? Has anything changed in the last week for you? Or month, or whatever you sort of define as like a period of time where you think it's good to check in with each other on like where you're at. And I think it requires good negotiating skills. And these aren't as technical as maybe they're sounding. It's more of like of feeling and leaning and sitting back with and understanding space. It's really hard for me to like get it. It's like some of these things are really difficult but necessary, and you got to find your way with them. I think it takes an immense amount of understanding on both partners' parts. Like when a partner says, I need this in order to be happy, or in order to be not happy, but in order to enjoy this relationship. Sometimes that takes like an immense level of empathy. Like you have to go into that other person's life and life experience and understand why they're saying what they're saying, and then pull it back and pretty much ask yourself, can I do this with this person? Is this fair to me? Is it worthwhile? Does it fit into my circle of needs and desires in a relationship? And I think that that's another key thing, is that there shouldn't be an overextension of compromise. I think that your partner's desires and needs should somewhat fit into yours. Like, I don't think that a man should say, well, I want to have sex with, you know, three women whenever I want, and you should be okay with that. If you're not okay with it, I think that you should say, well, that doesn't work for me. Can we compromise? And go from there. And I think it takes a lot of courage to have an unconventional union, because it requires you to speak your truth and to be really willing to face the consequences of speaking your truth and hearing your partner's truth. And the boundaries can be as broad or as rigid as both parties agree to it. I think many people maybe use unconventional as an excuse to be ignorant to the other person's needs or wants. But I think it's the complete opposite. I think it's like you get to be super clear in the unconventional. My thoughts are complete at this time.
Thank you. I really liked, I liked how succinct you were with the how will I know when I'm ready for her question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I stop asking that, how will I know when she's ready for me? It's a similar thing. I'll stop asking that. I'll just know.
Mm-hmm.
From where I come from as a teacher, or where I'm and my life experience around this is, and I mentioned this earlier, one of my favorite and simplest ways of looking at the question, these questions that have been brought up, how will I know when I'm ready, how will I know when she's ready, what is unconventional marriage, or what does this mean to me, is David Data talks about these three broad brush categories or ways of looking at our relationship to the world,
mm-hmm.
to our romantic sexual partners, to basically anybody. You know, the first stage is acquisition. How much can I get? How much money mm-hmm. can I get? Mm-hmm. How much success can I get? How much sex can I get?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about satisfying what seems to be my insatiable appetite. And I certainly see lots of younger men basically caught up in our appetites.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a real problem with when this gets turned into needs. I don't think it has anything to do with needs. I think it has to do with a lot of want. And I think we're in a culture that has hypersexualized us, elevates sex and orgasm
mm-hmm.
and pleasure, period. Basically, you know, dopamine responses to being what it's all about here. And that's a really hard place to be as a young person if there's no balance to that. And I don't see that happening in our culture generally. I just see more and more of the pursuit of the rush, the dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always this feeling of, I'm ready for her. I'm ready for more. I'm ready for more sugar. I'm ready for more sex. I'm ready for more fast food. I'm ready for more of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm doing with the guys who are working with me is really, and I mentioned Stephen Jenkinson to you earlier, and the other night I was at a performance of his, and he, as part of the, he's a poet and a storyteller, and he started this one story with, you know, we all have mothers, and your mother probably made you lunch, and she probably made you sit down to eat that lunch. She was breaking your momentum, because we need to have our momentum broken. Otherwise, we're just in this slurry of moments and we don't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, in every spiritual tradition, every spiritual teacher really is about breaking your momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And that I've certainly experienced that in my life. So if I go back to this first stage, you know, there's this momentum of like more,
mm-hmm.
more. I want to eat. I want to fill my face with food, with pussy, with success, money. I want to just, you know, how much can I grab?
Yeah.
And the culture really, as I said earlier, just really feeds that. You know, like, I mean, I worked in business development and marketing for years, and it was all about like, you know, 24/7. Voraciousness, you know, how much can you do? How much can you take on? How much, you know, how many more clients? How many sales? How much money? And I just saw people getting hollow with that. Now, data talks about the second stage is where we start to negotiate. And I heard some of that in what you were talking about. So then,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I'm in a relationship with, if I'm in a business relationship, if I'm in relationship with a, you know, for me it would be a woman because that's my orientation. You know, it's the negotiation about, well, what do you, you know, what are your wants or needs and what are mine and how do we make that happen? And yeah, absolutely, communication skills, negotiation skills are paramount there. What I ran up against eventually in that was, it didn't really matter how good my communication skills were or my negotiation skills were. There was part of me, and I think part of the other, that could feel like there was something more.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I was stuck in this negotiation place, as my beloved put it to me not so long ago, you know, my obsession with 50-50, in our relationship, the more I look at my life and the world through the lens of masculine and feminine energies, not just man and woman, but these energies that give me I think an interesting way to understand myself and the world around me. And I didn't make this up. Somebody else made it up. It's like I have to bring 100% all the time. It's never 50-50. It's 100%, 100%, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So whatever I'm doing, if I'm going to be in my masculine to hold space, then I need to be 100% there. So to go back to those questions, I need to not, you know, I just know when I'm ready. I just know when she's ready because I'm 100% there. And I think it was Data who said in a workshop, he said, you know, like, look at the difference between being present and presence. So being present is really important. But what's my presence? Like, how deeply grounded and rooted am I in here? And how much can I receive? Because, and this is my experience, it's what I've observed in other men particularly, is that as I start to become more of my deeper presence, she, the feminine, whether it's inside myself or the world or this woman who I love, brings me more testing or challenging. That's how I experience it. But actually, it's just this flow of like, okay, you're ready. Well, here's more beauty. Here's more love. And it doesn't look like anything that I thought it would look like. And so at first, I'm just kind of like, whoa, slow down. But there's no slowing down. It's just like, okay, you know, ground myself. And you talked earlier about, you know, how do you get to these places? What I would call, you know, how do you develop presence? How do you... I mean, that's the work. For me, it's been, you know, yoga and meditation. It's been physical practices, meditative practices, breath practices. It's not for everybody, but that's what's working for me. And then I would say that second stage, what David Data calls second stage relationships, are conventional relationships. So, you know, maybe we actually do gather in front of our community and we make vows and we abide by those vows and we both know what they mean or have some understanding of that and we've come to them through some kind of negotiation. But to me, that's a really masculine way of dealing with the world. It has to do with words and contracts. And it has to do with ideas about reliability and commitment that are very much come from a masculine world. And my experience of the feminine is that, and again, it's not man-woman thing so much as this way of being. And women tend to be more feminine identified than they are masculine identified and vice versa. But the feminine really is not about words, and it's not about, I mean, it was interesting watching you talk about this, because my interpretation was that you got to a place where the words just stopped. You were feeling more, and you knew more than there were words for it. And I think that's that third stage relationship to reality and to each other, is when, you know, words will take us so far, and then we're in this place where I experience it often as silence, darkness,
lightness.
Light could be light, but a light that's kind of overwhelming, where it's just kind of like, whoa, again, it's just like, what, you know, I'm going to go into my head here and try to like figure things out. And this is why, for me, yogic and meditative practice is so important, because I need to go into my body. I need to actually just, okay, like, how do I feel this? And there was something you said earlier, and forgive me, I can't remember what it was, but I have to train my body. As a masculine-identified man, my culture has trained me to toughen my body. I'm already physically denser than you are, Melissa, you know, than most women I know. I'm physically denser, my skin is thicker. And then the culture has taught me to not pay attention to even the things that get through. It's taught me to pay attention to words. So when you say something, I may or may not listen to you. And that's a problem. but even when I hear you, I need to be careful not to put it into the kind of terms that would make sense to me and my buddy, my male buddies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important for me to spend time in solitude, but also to spend time in yogic practice and meditative practice to basically resensitize my body, to reset my nervous
mm-hmm.
system.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I'm sitting in a room with you and we're not talking, and this happens to me a lot with the woman I love, to know that there's actually a lot going on. Now, my mistake previously was thinking there was nothing going on, or that she was hiding something from me,
mm-hmm.
and that I needed to hear it in words. And now it's like, oh, it's like where you got to that place where the words, you know, there was more, but the words weren't sufficient. It's like, okay, that's a beautiful place. Like, how do I actually hold space for that?
Mm-hmm.
And then start to feel it. And if it's always going to be approximate, I'm not going to ever act. Well, who knows? Maybe, you know, if I get deeper into this, then I will. It's not going to be approximate. I'm going to feel you or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And more I experience that. And so sometimes I think I'm moving into that place that David Deida calls that third stage, where I'm serving love rather than
mm-hmm.
trying to just get as much of something I need. I think I need this. I turn it to needs, or in the second stage where I'm negotiating for things.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just, or occasionally, I'm able to just sit there and go, okay, relax. Relax and start to feel into what's being offered. And then that becomes the most beautiful and nourishing thing that I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to you earlier, you know, when I was having this conversation with the woman I love, and she said, we were talking about unconventional relationships, and I was talking about how I was actually really happy. And she said, she didn't say that she was unhappy. She said, if mm-hmm. I was you, I don't think I'd be happy.
Yeah.
And I knew enough not to go into like, well, what do you mean by that? Because we'd be on the rocks because
mm-hmm.
she wouldn't have words. What I needed to do was just sit with that and realize that it doesn't matter what she thinks or whatever. I'm actually happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm working really hard at not being in that second or first stage place where I'm making demands that I can't remember the quote exactly, and I can't even remember the author, but she's written about Tantra and women and the role of women, historically the role of women in Buddhist Tantra practices. And she said in that tradition, it is the woman who initiates, that the man never initiates. And in the yogic tradition that I studied, a similar thing was said. It was, you know, the woman always decides. You may think as a man, you may think that you're pursuing her, but she's already let you know that she wants your attention.
Mm-hmm.
If you're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the mistake that a lot of us men make, and this goes back to those first questions, is we confuse our own want for a need or for a certainty. And so then we're confused about what she's actually presenting us with.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do the work of paying attention to our own bodies and sensitizing our own nervous system, then there's no longer a question. It's like, oh, I'm feeling her interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so then and it was great what you said. I can't remember how you said it, but, you know, so then I will move towards you, and then I have to pay attention because you may actually move back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or I move towards you, like if we use like actual physical proximity, you know, I might move towards you a foot and you move back. So I step back
mm-hmm.
and then I might move forward 3 inches and you stay. And then I sit with that. Mm-hmm. And then I move forward 3 inches and you stay. And then I move forward another 3 inches and then you back up. So like this, so the negotiation skills are not just not just verbal, which again is how this culture mm-hmm. teaches us, but it's how we stand, it's how you stand, it's what your eyes are doing, it's mm-hmm. what my eyes are doing, it's how I'm breathing, it's how you're breathing.
Exactly. Yeah. And thank you for saying that, because that's what I was trying to say, that like it's not as clinical as I'm making it sound. Negotiating isn't necessarily sitting down and being like, okay, and writing up a contract and you sign and I sign. It is a dance. It's like this energetic negotiating that is consistent. And I think that it's unrealistic to think that we can enter into a third stage union with anybody. I think that you have to go through second stage to get to third stage. And once you do, then you get to really be in third stage. I think the relationship has masculine, feminine, not just the man and the woman. I think that the relationship container itself is masculine and the ecstatic is the feminine. So when you give a clear container for the relationship, that's when you get to be third stage. Otherwise, especially in this world, in this day and age, my last 2-3 relationships have been with people with narcissistic tendencies. And that's a very dangerous person to just try to be in a third stage relationship with. They're not capable of it. They are scheming and manipulating and trying to get things from you all the time. So there's a certain amount of testing that will occur in the negotiating process and in the clear communicating process that will help you to put the riverbanks in so that the river can flow in its fury or third stage or ecstatic love or ecstasy.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, like anyway, I was going to make a comment about narcissism. I mean, I would just describe that as somebody stuck in their first stage. It's basically all about them. But whatever words we use, mm-hmm. I think you're right. I mean, you can't, I certainly haven't, you know, I think right now I'm in a place where I'm beginning to experience something of what this third stage might be like. And
how long did that take you with your specific partner?
Fuck me. You know, like it's, I feel like I'm still, yeah, like the testing, it's like I still find myself visited by first stage stuff. You know, I want, mm-hmm. I want.
Yeah.
I don't experience, and I don't express it as need. And it's not like, well, I need mm-hmm. this. It's more mm-hmm. like, and I question myself, I go like, well, what is this thing then? And that's where the whole idea of the unconventionality of it comes up for me. And why? So I did training as a wedding celebrant. And as I did that training, I just became, because I actually think this third stage place is a sacred or holy place. Like, I think it's a place where we, I love what you said, you know, like, I mean, I, you know, the masculine in me creates this container, and then this beautiful, ecstatic thing happens, which is beyond words. And it's, I think it's, you know, maybe it's, there's similarities for people, but I think it's also highly personal, and everybody who goes there basically creates their own unconventional space within mm-hmm. a safe space. And my thoughts about marriage as an institution is that it has been historically a, I would say, a first stage institution. I think there's been a lot of work to try to redeem it as a second stage, you know, a place where you can actually negotiate and have both of your wants or needs met, all that kind of stuff. But as I watch people, I think that's less and less true. I think, and what I feel in my own experiences there is that she, the woman, almost always starts to move to, I want to go to a deeper place. Mm-hmm. And that deeper place often means I don't want to do things the way they've been done. So there's no contract here about me providing sex for you. Mm. And for most of us men, and certainly for me, that's been like, well, what the fuck? Like, what happened? And it's not about love. It's about, I want to take this somewhere deeper. I mean, I even had this said to me, you know, I want our sex to be sacred. And instead of taking that as like
invitation,
as an invitation to, okay, you know, show some leadership here, you know, like that's like, take us to this place. My response was, well, I'm busy working here. Why don't you look after that and I'm along?
Right.
You know, we'll do this thing, like we'll share these things instead of recognizing that, oh, she's actually inviting me to go to someplace I have no clue about, mm-hmm. go somewhere that I know nothing at all about, but I have to trust her. And I like what you said about trust being this, like it's, for the masculine, it tends to be about like checking boxes, you know, like mm-hmm. check, check, check. Okay, you know, 3 out of 4 boxes are checked. I can trust that. My experience around the feminine, including my own, is there's no check boxes. There, like, I think, I can't remember what you said. It was like, you trust until you don't.
Is until it isn't.
So for lots of us guys, that just seems totally unreasonable.
Right. I've done this for how many years and now
exactly. And now you're pulling this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I look at marriage or conventional marriage or conventional union, whatever, as, well, we have a contract, you know, mm-hmm. like you're supposed to abide by this. Like, don't you agree to this? Mm-hmm. And my experience is that will never hold her. It'll never... More importantly, it'll never get me what I really want. That if I rely on the institution, whether it's a legal document or whether it's, you know, a handshake agreement or whether it's just an agreement that we've made looking into each other's eyes, that only lives in this moment, mm-hmm. for her or mm-hmm. for the feminine. And I have to constantly be...
Up-leveling?
Leveling up and also deepening, or the same thing, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at friends of mine in relationships, I don't see any, and I have friends who have like good, long-term, mm-hmm. committed relationships, and I'm happy for them. I mean, that's great. They're, you know, like they seem to be doing fine. But that's not what I want. I don't see in their relationships what I want. And so what do I want? And more, it's this weird thing that I'm doing, which is unconventional. Mm-hmm. And I see this played out across, and it's certainly in my life, every time I've been in a conventional relationship at some point, she has asked for, to take it to some place of outside of that.
Yeah.
And most of the time that scared me so much that she's eventually mm-hmm. made it so unconventional that she's broken it and she's left.
Right.
And I see that all over the place. I just see us as men being so afraid of what she's suggesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That we don't have the nervous system strength and the depth to just go, oh, I wonder where this is going to go.
Well, and I think and believe and have experienced that third stage relationship is the ideal. However, it's not attainable in every single moment in a relationship. it's kind of like, it's not a college degree. Once you get it, you have it forever. It's like it's an in the moment yes or a no, you know, and you should be aspiring to it in every moment, but it's not always going to be the case. There are going to be realistically difficult conversations that have to be had in order to establish more trust, you know, and or energetic communication. But I mean, I think it's always just better to not assume you know what your partner is thinking unless you've been with them for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years and everything is pretty well established and you are living third stage. I think it's better to just be like, hey, I didn't like, to me, curiosity is the highest level of being a good partner. I didn't understand what you meant when you said that. I got triggered. Can you maybe explain it to me? Or, you know, give me a hug or, you know, show me in a way that I can understand what you meant there. Because I, you know, and a good partner would be like, yeah, like, this is what I mean. And or if you're like, I don't want you to feel that way. And I meant this and here's my heart. And, you know, I think the elusive third stage is like you shoot for the stars and you hit the moon. You know, like you shoot for as far as you can, but realistically relationships do require. And I don't think it's like, I don't believe in 50-50. I think it's just a good thing to let your partner know what you can't handle, you know, because I've been in relationships where there weren't clearly defined things and I was seeking or loving for the sake of love and he was cheating and I was trying and it was like, that's not fair. You know, like I need to say I'm out if you do this, you know, like that's, you can't just sort of leave it up to the person to know what you will and won't stand for, I think, in a realistic relationship.
My guess is that your partner at the time knew that this was a transgression and did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So basically they're in that first stage, and when we're dealing with people who are in their first stage, I mean, you can trust them to be untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm. But how would you know that other than a conversation, right? Like, how do you build that without words or communicating in some way?
Well, I think we're always communicating. So I was in a relationship with a woman who was a communications coach, and she was very, you know, very good with words. Lawyers are very good with words.
I can
be very good with words.
Words are weapons.
So, actually, one of the first books that really helped me. I didn't understand what was happening. I always thought, okay, well, on the word level, I agree with you, but something doesn't feel right for me. And at that time, I had no way of no conceptual way of making sense of that. My body understood something. That there was we weren't in alignment around something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I read a book by a woman called Susan Page, who it's a book called Why Talking Is Not Enough. And I loved it. All of a sudden it made a whole lot of sense for that relationship and the one I was in, where a lot of stuff was happening that was nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the book, you know, the Love Languages book also talks about that. You know, like there's lots of ways of communicating. And I mean, his focus in there is how you communicate love, but there's also lots of ways of communicating out of love or disconnect. And so for any man who's listening to this, I just encourage you to, you know, okay, you don't want to, maybe you don't want to practice yoga and meditation, or you don't want to do that kind of thing. But that book's a pretty simple way, I think, to understand some of the different ways that, that we can be with each other, express love, and be disconnected in love.
Yeah.
And I would agree with you that, you know, like, I think this idea of the third stage is, I mean, when you talked about, you know, the container and then this ecstatic kind of place, all I can think of is this, that we disappear in that place. And most of us don't want to disappear. You know, I think, I'm not sure I want to disappear. But as I get closer and closer, or as the more and more I experience her radiance and those moments where I can hold a space, then it's like, oh, I'm okay. I'm okay with disappearing here. And that only lasts for as long as that lasts. And then, of course, I'm back to, you know, this meat body that, that still thinks it needs to overeat and oversex and all these things.
Well, I read a post recently, one of, I think you, one of your favorite feminine practitioners, Nina Lombardi, I think is her name. She was saying, polarity without integrity is basically just
abuse,
which is kind of what I'm saying. It's like, integrity, what does integrity encompass, or what encompasses integrity? And it, I think it requires a container. And, like, you know, for some people, integrity is over here, and for other people, it's over here. So you need to sort of have an understanding of what integrity means to your partner. And then, and I think that there are some very universal things that are integrity, or what it means to have integrity. And then you just get to play. Like, once those are established, then you move into the ecstatic, you know? It's like, and it doesn't have to be so technical, but there has to be a continuous show of integrity on both parts for both to be ecstatic.
So tell me about what you consider to be the kind of the basic kind of elements of integrity. As a feminine identified woman, what does integrity feel like to you? When you experience it in a masculine man,
he is like, I desire a monogamous relationship. So for me to experience integrity, he would honor that, and he wouldn't try to go outside of that end or have a poly relationship with me while I'm saying I'm into monogamy. So him honoring my desires for monogamy and commitment. Somebody that does what they say, and they don't say it unless they're going to do it. Don't give me lip service. Speak when you're sure. And do more than you speak. Because it actually is true that actions do speak louder than words. So yeah, just those two things. I mean, because they're so personal, that's what integrity would mean to me.
And for me, I guess the integrity that I look for is I want to experience your flow. I want to experience your freedom. And you will do that to the extent that you feel my integrity. Like, I think we're, the masculine is always the one in the lead in terms of creating that, as you called it, a container. And And I think this is a nice way to segue into this last question here, though. When will the patriarchy bashing end? I mean, I don't know if you want to take a stab at this or do you want me to continue?
I think the patriarchy, what did he call it? Jabbing?
Patriarchy bashing.
Bashing will end for you when you stop being offended by it and stop acting as if you're representing the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. I think patriarchy, the word itself, can actually be quite honorable and tender and fatherly and husbandly. That's not a word, but I'm making it one. Stop making it a personal thing and start being the patriarchy that you know everybody deserves.
Again, I'm going to refer to Stephen Jenkinson. He did a talk recently on and wrote about matrimony. So he went to the roots of, he said, really, it's not about marriage so much. It's about the conditions of mothering. So what are the conditions or the container that allows for that level of vulnerability? So the vulnerability that begins by the woman opening her body to receive the man, mm-hmm. continues as she gestates the child, carries the child, continues as she gives birth, an extremely vulnerable place. Mm-hmm. And then the vulnerability of having young children and raising them. So again, he was quite dismissive of how we treat marriage as being this kind of 15 minutes of kind of glory. Mm-hmm. And he was actually pointing us to a much deeper place of the matrimony is about a condition where the in this case, the woman actually is able to be profoundly vulnerable in a way that we as men will never, never experience in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And he said patrimony, on the other, is a related thing. It has to do with the material conditions that allow that. So historically, patrimony and anthropologically, patrimony referred to the material wealth of what the man, in this case, would bring to that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard when you were talking about, you know, a kind of reimagining patriarchy, that's what I was hearing. It's like, where I took that was like, what's my patrimony?
Mm-hmm.
How do I provide a safe space? And yeah, it's never, it's always 100%. It's never 50-50. I can't expect you to be 50-50 when you're in the midst of any of the stuff to do with you know, physical mothering.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you can't expect me to be 50-50 with carrying the child.
Yeah.
With nursing the child, with giving birth. Like there's no, mm-hmm. there's no equivalencies. There's no exchange. There's just, and you know, saying this, I need to own that, you know, I wasn't there in that way. I mean, I did,
mm-hmm.
I did what I thought was adequate, but it was really colored by my fear, of surrendering to basically an experience that was far beyond me. Like to become a father was something that just scared the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind what she was going through. I was just so wrapped up in my own fear that I was just struggling to keep my body present. I also think, and Stephen Jenkinson didn't elaborate on this, but you know, my view of the feminine and and particularly women who are feminine identified, is that even if you never give birth to a child, energetically, you're always giving birth. I mean, physically, your body goes through this cycle every month that our culture, again, really tries to dismiss and kind of push away, so that you can be like full participants in the economy and et cetera, et cetera. But there's another level of, this is what I see, there's another level of giving birth that if I'm paying attention, it's happening really subtly all around me all the time. And particularly if I'm holding space for the woman I love, I get to watch something like this happen. You know, I experience it as her radiance. And she's not, it's not like a conscious thing. It's just, she relaxes and she opens and her body opens and she becomes incredibly vulnerable. And that to me is a kind of mother gift to me, like not as her being my mother, but her being the mother of something that we've just created, a moment. And my capacity to hold space for that is that trust. I can trust this, and then maybe there's a bit more of that, and then oh my God. So my answer to this man, you know, when will the patriarchy bashing end, is not, you know, it's very similar to yours. It's, I think it's when we start living up to the level of gift that many women bring into our lives, and that most of us men are not really paying attention to, not at that level. And I think that word comes out as a weapon, and we receive it that way because we've been trained in this idea of 50-50, of fair exchange, of contracts, and we don't really understand why that we're actually being invited to go deeper.
Yeah.
And that when we resist that invitation, then we just become, to go take it back to this idea of convention and unconventionality, then we become the police state for the conventional. And of course we're going to, you know, she's going to become angry. She's going to feel hurt. She's going to feel like she's been, to use your word, we've fallen out of integrity, and she's like a cornered cat. And we're going to get all the history, all the millennia of abuse that we visited on the feminine. It's going to be there, like right now. That's my interpretation of that.
Yeah, I think in the face of being bashed, if you do what the real patriarchy means, which is look into her eyes and create a container for her frustration and anger and let it play out, she's gonna start being like, oh, you don't deserve this bashing. So the more men that can actually sit and just not take it and absorb it, but let the chaos occur with a very grounded presence, the more she's going to see, oh, you are a trustable man. So there is no need to talk about this patriarchy anymore, because there's so many of you that we feel safe.
Or even one of us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's part of the problem, is that most of us men, we're waiting for somebody else to step up to the plate and change things. And mostly we're asking you as women to change things.
Yeah, well, I think that we've been pushing that too, you know, with the feminist movement. I think really confused my generation and even my dad's generation to think that women, yes, you should have more masculine qualities, and let's encourage them and reward them. And so we're all confused. But if everybody can just chill a little bit.
Okay, so how do we, so this goes back to like some really basic stuff, I think. I mean, really, it's, for me, it's like take a breath, slow down, slow down. You know, you said, I would have said, don't take this stuff personally. Mm-hmm. You know, I took far too much personally. I had myself, well, I'm being like so fucking amazing. Like, why are you like, you know, and it wasn't about that. It wasn't about me. In fact, the more amazing I became, and I experienced this just, I explained it to you earlier, just the other day, you know, like we had this really beautiful time together and stuff started to surface for her that was long buried and she needed to express it. And it was really not comfortable. I mean, I felt, but I also recognized that, you know, my discomfort had to do with recognizing my behavior in that moment that she was describing. It wasn't discomfort with her being angry with me or calling me out on something. It had to do with, oh yeah, I behave like an asshole. And I don't feel good about that. So, you know, what does it take for anybody, any man listening to this to be able to hold that space? I mean, I would say it takes
yoga. Courage. And,
well, yeah, exactly. But how do you get there? I would say, you know, find a teacher, find a yoga teacher who will actually help you strengthen your nervous system so that when the shit hits the fan, because if you're with a fem, I mean, David, again, I've quoted him a lot tonight, but David Data says, you know, if you're a masculine identified man in love with a feminine identified woman, you know, like you'll never have peace. Like it will just, always going to be challenge. And at some point, I would say it stops feeling like an interruption of your peace and an invitation to more beauty. But to do that, you need to have a practice. You need to have some way of like.
Well, I think I came up with this practice this morning, actually, in the shower. I have all my best thoughts in the shower, or what I perceive as my best thoughts when I'm in the water. Because I keep having this question, like, what is, like, when we say be a man, what does that mean, be a man, right? Like, and that triggers men because there's no answer to it. There's no clearly defined answer to it, really, from the feminine, especially, or from females. What does that mean? And so then I thought to myself, well, imagine, you know, when you're a child as a boy, what would it feel like to have a father that was a man? Like, what are the components that he would display, the characteristics, the personality, the behaviors that he would gift you as a man, as a male mentor, as somebody that you could look up to, and then start to like make your mental checklist of this is what it means to be a man, because I want somebody that can lead me and encourage me and challenge me in a healthy way. And, you know, so maybe that's one practice that in addition to the actual real grounding practices that you're talking about, I think having a strong desire is a component for this. Like, you have to really want to figure this out, and then you're going to do the things, you know, because a lot of men are not willing. I don't want to meditate. That feels weird. I don't want to do yoga practice. That's uncomfortable. I don't, you know, but it's like these very things are what are going to make you the man that is the man. So yeah.
So I have an invitation, and we'll close with this now. Do you want to lead us through like a really short visualization of that, or would you like me to do that and you just chime in where it's appropriate?
You can do that. I don't actually have any.
Okay, well, we'll just do that here. So I'm sure. Just going to invite everybody who's listening, every man who's listening, and every woman too, because all of us need to develop what I think is this masculine capacity to hold space for the feminine. So this is just a little way to do that. So whether you're sitting or standing or lying down, just close your eyes. And as Melissa suggested, imagine that you're yourself as a child. And maybe imagine a moment in your life that you really wanted something from your father. You wanted him to hold you, or you wanted him to protect you. Or it could be a small thing or a big thing. And as you're imagining that, just start to feel into your, just breathe slowly and deeply into your belly, letting the front of your body soften, and start to feel where that child is, where that childhood memory of your father is. And I know that most of us have an experience of our father somewhere not being able to come through. If you don't have that experience, then you're a very lucky man or woman. But most of us have some memory of wanting our father to be something and not experiencing that. So spend a couple of breaths just feeling that. And maybe a couple of more breaths, if you can, just letting him off the hook, because he never had any training in how to be lots of what he needed to be, what we wanted him to be. And then start imagining what that experience would have been like if he would have been the kind of father you wanted or needed as that child. And I'm going to say need, because when we're children, we need our fathers to be stable, to protect us, to be part of providing a home, a place where we can relax and just be children, where we can laugh, where we can cry, where we can experience this world, because it's all new to us and we're just experimenting. We need our dads to hold us, hold the space, so that we can experiment with some kind of safety. So I don't know what you're imagining your dad might do in that situation, but imagine him doing it. And as he's doing it, imagine how it feels. Like start to feel that in your body, how good it is to be in the presence of a man whose presence you feel. He doesn't have to say anything. Maybe he is, but he doesn't have to say anything. You just know that when you're around him, all the discomfort that you're going through as you learn about the world is, you're safe in that. And if you can, look into his eyes and let your heart open to him. And you can do that by just softening your belly. As you breathe, softening up to your middle of your chest, and all the way up to your throat. So you're actually releasing some of the protection that you've been carrying with you ever since this incident, or maybe before. And you're starting to experience your father as the man that you needed and that you still need. Except that now you know how to do this for yourself. And that's not to take it away from another man. If you're a man, it could be your best friend, it could be your mentor, it could be your coach. It could be your father, it could be your uncle. And if you're a man, you can imagine doing this for your nephew or your son, or the kid on the hockey team that you coach. You just have so much presence and so much stability that whatever is happening, you're not taking it personal. You're allowing the world to swirl around you, and you're stable. Now just, if this isn't too weird for you, just take your arms and hold yourself. Basically, this is an exercise on learning how to hold yourself, whether you're a man or a woman. Holding yourself and learning how to relax into that safe container that you just made for yourself. Not to the exclusion of other containers. As I said, there could be other men in your life who are trustworthy. But training yourself so that when you recognize that integrity and that depth, the things that Melissa's talked about, that you are actually able to relax into it and start to blossom. Every one of us has something to blossom. And just take three more deep breaths. Long and deep into your belly, always into a nice soft round belly, softening the front of your body. Your arms providing the container that holds you safe. And then with your last of those three breaths, just relaxing your arms. And you can stay here in that space if you want, or you can open your eyes and move into your day. I'm going to say thank you to everybody who's listening to this on the podcast, and thank you for the men who ask questions. And thank you, Melissa, for bringing your perspective and your experience.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Do you want to say anything more?
No, I feel broken open and perfect.
This is the thing, right? You know, for most of us guys, the idea of being broken open would be just the most frightening thing. And yet every time I've done any kind of feminine practice, that's what it does. It just fucking breaks me open.
Yeah.
It's so scary.
Yeah, it's scary for us too. But thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, see you, Hans.